This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast. Hey, friends, welcome to the podcast. So glad you're here. And you know what? It's officially fall. I mean, it doesn't feel like fall, and definitely not in Dallas, although it's been a little cooler. But September 1, like, I'm in for it. I've already made pumpkin donuts. Yes, I have. And I've made pumpkin bread. Like something, I mean, I'm not like someone that loves to cook and spends a lot of time in the kitchen, but something about fall, man, it brings out the very best in me. Been to Hobby Lobby, looked at all the things. Yes. So happy fall, you guys. So fired up about it. And football. Oh my gosh. Yeah. All the things I love. My favorite time of year. I'm wondering if it's yours too. All right. But listen, speaking of amazing things that I love, it's Lauren Chandler. And you guys, if you don't know Lauren Chandler, you need to. She's married to Matt Chandler, the Village Church here in the Metroplex area of Dallas-Fort Worth. And she's a worship leader, and she is a speaker, and she's just incredible. Does all kinds of things. A mom, obviously a wife. And today, she is talking to us about navigating this parenting of adult children and navigating people-pleasing and perfectionism and some hard places in marriage. And I love that through it all, we talk about the bravest prayers that we're praying for our family, for ourselves. And so she's just such a jewel. I feel like I don't get to talk to her enough, but she's always so willing to come on and share where she is in life and be honest and vulnerable. And yes, at the very beginning, it's a little weird because I specifically say, I'm not going to ask you about something that's going on or that was going on in their life. And then I proceed to ask about it. And then she talks about it. And it was a total Cynthia moment. So there you go. Some things never change. And that's me and somehow putting my foot in my mouth. But I love it that she was here for all of it. So you guys, here we go with Lauren Chandler. Lauren, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Cynthia?
Oh, I'm good. I always love talking to you guys. You're so much fun. And we actually, I say this every time, but we live within 30 minutes of each other. Never met in person.
I know. One day. It's going to happen.
We're going to make this happen someday. Mm-hmm. I was thinking out something with you guys. I was watching social media, and I follow you guys, obviously. And before anybody panics and gets sweaty, I'm not getting ready to ask the question you think I'm going to ask. But you and Matt both had kind of a health scare in the last, in the last year, right?
Yes. It was the end of December for me. End of December, like over Christmas and the new year, and then into January for Matt. Yeah.
Okay. So I remember, I mean, literally, I remember praying over y'all. I remember it started with you and then it was Matt. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then it wasn't that much longer. And you posted something that I thought, and I can't remember. I should have looked it up. That was so fabulous. You're basically like, thanks for praying, guys. Yeah. We're better. We're not actually going to disclose all of our medical stuff.
Right.
And I thought, that must be a hard way to live. That like you feel like you have to tell people like, hey, FYI, we're probably not going to tell you every detail of our illness. That's got to be tough.
It was weird. And I think the part of the reason we didn't want to tell people is because we didn't want them to be freaked out and weirded out, especially like in our community. Because everybody was like, oh my gosh, what if this is y'all like patient zero and all this stuff? And there were just not very many answers to what we have.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, cause it's past. I think in the midst of it, it was one of those things where I was like, hey, if this was something that we felt like general public was at risk, we would say something. But right now we're still trying to figure out. It was almost just a boundary where I'm like, I don't have to tell you, you know, if I don't want to. So please don't do that to me. But now that I'm kind of at a place where I'm like, okay, I'm willing to talk about it, which I really don't mind. It's kind of funny.
Oh, and you don't have to. I know. You made the point of that there is such an expectation. And even me, I was like, well, gosh, how are we ever going to know? And I'm like, wait. It's not my business. And I just thought it's interesting how we think we all have the insider track to everyone's life and we deserve an answer.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
no. But I will kind of tell you, cause it's kind of a funny story, cause there's been no confirmed diagnosis for me, but I think Matt and I had the same thing. He just probably had two separate things, what I had in like a common cold virus. So they didn't test me for a common cold virus because I did not present as someone who had a common cold virus, and it was not COVID. It was like adenovirus. But I guess there can be some cases where if it's in close, like living spaces, so like colleges, military bases, it can kind of get out of hand and can be pretty serious. But I they didn't test me, so I didn't test positive. Matt did test positive, but he had also kind of been sick before he got really sick with what I had. I have a theory, and maybe I'm wrong.
I love a good theory. Let's go.
It's based on, and it came to me while I was watching an episode of the PBS show, All Creatures Great and Small. Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar. I don't watch it, but that's okay, Lauren. I love
it's
that you do.
So good. I want to like crawl through the screen and go live in that era. But there's an episode where the vet gets brucellosis, and his symptoms were really similar to mine and to Matt's. And I, you know, started thinking back through when I got sick, the timeline of me getting sick, the timeline of Matt getting sick. It was so far apart for an incubation period would have been crazy. I was around so many more people because it was the holidays. I'd prepared food for a family gathering. I'd prepared food for a friend gathering. I mean, while I started feeling sick, I didn't know I was sick. I was kind of like, I don't feel great, but I think I'm okay. And, but one thing I had done was I had put corn in our deer feeder, and brucellosis is kind of like a bacteria that, or a fungus or something that can be airborne. So you can't breathe it in. I'd seen some deer that didn't look great around my feeder. And then, you know, I get home from the doctor or from the hospital. Even the infectious disease doctor was like, I think it was something, this looks like more if you're around animals or something like that. And I didn't think of the deer feeder. And then it had been cold and we'd had little visitors, but I hadn't been there. So the corn wasn't in the feeder. So I asked Matt to fill it for me while I was still recovering at home. He filled it and he got sick not long after he filled it. And so I'm like, I think it was the deer. I think there was something that we breathed in. When you throw that corn in, stuff gets kind of kicked up. And so I'm like, I think it was something.
Was it the deer?
Yes, it was the deer. Anyway.
Don't even worry, people, because this is a high operating, high investigative podcast. ChatGPT'd brucellosis, or however you say it.
Yes.
It's bacteria from the brucella.
Yes.
Do you say Guinness? Is that how you say
genus?
That word?
Genus.
Yeah, that's embarrassing now because I don't even know how to say the word. Clearly, I'm so medically challenged.
So it's the bacteria. Okay,
symptoms, everyone. Fever, sweats, fatigue, joint pain, headaches, sometimes called undulant fever. I don't even know if I said that right.
I don't know what that
because
is.
Because symptoms can come and go. Yep. Common in livestock, cattle, goats, sheep, pigs, and can pass through humans, direct contact, or by contaminated animal products. So, for a girl who just said I wasn't going to ask anything about it, we really have gone in depth about it, Lauren. It's fine. So,
but that's just my theory. But it was something that felt like out of nowhere. And no one else around us got sick like that at all that we knew.
Well, thank goodness.
I know.
You know, I've always wanted to have, and this is going to come off really shallow, everybody. I've always wanted to have the exact same thing that my husband had because I wanted to prove that I'm so much tougher.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't really speak of it anymore because my husband nearly died of encephalitis and meningitis like 20 years ago.
Oh,
and no joke, Lauren, right before he went in the hospital, I didn't know what he had. I'm like, take a Benadryl and let's move on. And ever since then, everyone's like, take a Benadryl. But I have wanted to secretly have the same thing my husband had to see because, I mean, you know us, the show must go on. They're not testing you for a common cold because of course you didn't present with that.
No.
You're like, I'm fine.
And here's what's weird. It's funny. You know, here I am. I'm in the hospital for 8 days. Then I come home. It was like, I was hoping to come home and like bounce back and be ready, you know, but I was like a toddler. I'd wake up, I'd eat, then I'd get tired. I'd take a nap. Then I'd wake up and eat. And then I'd get tired and take another nap. It was crazy. Well, the first day I started feeling almost normal was the day I started seeing Matt kind of tank. And I was no, I'm not done. Mm-mm. Like, let me recover. Please let me recover before you get sick. So
I'm still sick. You cannot have this moment.
Gosh. Right. Like, can I just have it? I mean, you had brain cancer. Can I at least just have this, you know?
Let me just have the deer feed disease without you trying to steal the thunder.
Exactly.
Anyway. That's amazing. Well, we're so glad you guys are healthy and doing well and all the things. Tell us how old your kiddos are now.
Our oldest, Audrey's 22. Our son Reed is 19. He'll be 20 in a couple months. And then our youngest just turned 16. So all my kiddos are driving. Nora started school just the other day. And so first time she's driven herself to school. So
wow,
it's like a whole new world for me. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing here.
Yeah. What's my role? What's not my role? Well, that's what I was hoping we could talk out today. Totally. And just praying brave prayers over different areas of our life. And I don't know why it hit me when I was praying about what we could chat about, because I know you can talk about anything. I was like, you know what? I want to know what's she bravely praying over herself, her kids, her marriage. And so that's how this all kind of started. And so let's just start with parenting adult children. And by adults, like, you still have one in high school. Right. That's adult to me, because I do have older ones, but I also have a third grader. So yes, you know, but let's talk about these older kiddos. What's kind of taken you off guard as your kids have gotten older that you weren't expecting? And maybe you just said it, like, what's my role? Yeah. But what is that?
I think there's, what's my role is huge. Like, what's my role as their parent? What's my role in life, you know, as being a stay-at-home mom mainly? I mean, I do projects, but I feel like my main job is taking care of the kiddos and taking care of our home and the running of it. But I would say what has really caught me off guard is, you know, when your kids are little, they consume a lot of your time because you're taking care of them. You know, you've got to get them from here to there. You got to make sure they have food. You're thinking all the time about, you know, them. And I thought, well, when they're more self-sufficient, I'll stop thinking about them so much. Like, I'll just, you know, I'll have more time to think of other things. I don't know. But man, nope. I mean, if anything, I probably think about them more because I don't know what's going on. Like, I can't be there where they are. And how's work going for Audrey? How's school and work going for Reed? Yeah, I can ask him, but I'm not present there. And even Nora with school, and she plays sports. And so I was surprised by how much I still, like, they still take up a lot of my time. And I would say not in a bad way, but just like, hey, if there's any encouragement for my kids, I don't stop thinking about you guys. I mean, it's either praying for you, dedicating you to the Lord, wondering what you're doing, you know. Even when I'm on vacation, I'm thinking, what's going on with them, you know? So,
nobody prepares you for that. And as my second is going to college and a boy, so I've said a girl, and you got to love the firstborn girl. Like, I just distressed over the whole college thing. And then, like, 4 days in, I realized, oh, she's calling me every 2.5 hours to give me an update, which was lovely. Yes. But I know how it's going to go with my son. And like, I'm like, gosh, there's just no way for him to process, like you're saying, how much we just want to know how you're doing and the details. And of course I want him to be self-sufficient. I don't want him calling his mommy every five minutes. But I'm also like, when he went on a trip with some friends and I said, will you do me a favor while you're gone, text us once a day on the family chat and just tell us how you're doing and send a picture and if something going on. No lie, Lauren, he sent us a picture of the map of the island. I did not want a picture of a map.
I can look like, I would like that to up see on Google.
Signs of life. Yes. Like, oh my gosh. So yeah, I'm with you on that. It's just, and I'm also reminded as I'm getting ready to send another one to college and how much I love this child and how I'm reminded how much the Father wants community with us. Like, that's just, you know, the God relationship with us and how we are. I mean, he thinks of us, he loves us, he cries with us, and how he wants that communication with us. And I'm just reminded, like, when my kids let me down on that, I'm like, I just want to do better. I just want to spend time with the Lord and honor that. So that's a good word. Of all these years of raising kids and the little ones, and we've done all the things and we've tried all the stuff and we followed all the books and then we gave up on the books. Now, what can you say at this point in your parenting? Are there things you've seen that have been redemptive that you're like, okay, it's paying off. Yeah. It's worked.
What the most redemptive part of parenting for me, I think, that's paid off the most, has been this kind of unrelenting desire to want to be connected with them in some way. But just connected enough to let them have some experiences on their own, to not micromanage them, but to let them know that I'm here for them, that I love them, that no matter what's going on, I want to hear about it. And I think to be a place where they can come and I don't know how good I am at this, but try to not be judgmental in it. And then anything that does come up, you know, that I'm like, oh, okay, I want to address this, like prayerfully bringing that to the Lord. Like, okay, is this my, how do I bring this up? How do I confront this? And there, I mean, there are definitely times where it's obvious, okay, I've got to like be upfront about this and share just wisdom and, but explain my heart behind it, not be like, I just want you to do it because I want you to look this way and I care about my reputation and you reflect on me. Not that, but more like, can I just communicate my heart behind this? And so just trying to make the decisions that protect the relationship the best that I can. And so I do feel like that is what I am experiencing the fruit of right now, where they are willing to talk to me. They're willing to hear me when I have concerns or, you know, and just also reminding them how much I love them and then what I see in them and what I feel like has been over their life. So for each one of my kids, for my two older ones, I had like a verse that was kind of their verse. Poor baby. I ran out of verses. I don't know. You know.
We're sorry. We tried.
I know. Yeah. I was like, oh, you know, I had like this little journal for my firstborn.
Same.
But just reminding them what I felt like the Lord had over their life. So for Audrey, her name means a noble strength. And so from Psalm 16, there's a part where it says, they are the noble ones in whom is all my delight. And then for Reed, a bruised reed, he will not break. So just kind of this tenderness, but also strength in that. And then for Nora, when she was born, I literally laughed her out. She just came so easy that I giggled and she came into the world. And so I've always told her, you have just been marked by joy. You bring joy wherever you are. And so kind of reminding them of who they are, who I felt like the Lord had, you know, made them. And so being that place where they can come, they can connect. I try my hardest not to judge, but also will share my concerns or, you know, wisdom when they open the door now that they're adults. And then the why behind it, and then reminding them of who I feel like God's made them to be. And I think they're willing to just be around. And I think that's what I want. I want them to feel like they can come around, they can bring their friends around, they can bring their, you know, my son can bring his girlfriend around. I really love her too. And Nora can bring her friends around. So that's some of the fruit.
Yeah.
I feel like we're the redemptive fruit we're experiencing. So,
yeah, that's a word right there. You guys, like I literally just wrote it on a sticky because I'm writing a note to my kid going to college I'm writing him just a note to leave in his desk drawer, but to take a moment and tell your kids what you see in them and how you see that God created them and remind them of those. I mean, that's what a powerful thing to do for our kids. Tell us, what's the bravest prayer that you've been praying over your adult kids?
This is brave for me. I wrote it down. Father, I give them to you. Let me not get in your way. That's the bravest and probably the scariest because I want to control and I want to make sure they're doing it right so that I can protect them from all manner of pain, you know, but I know the Lord uses pain and some of the best stories of people that I know had to go through some hard things. But gosh, the Lord is redeeming all of that, all of those hard parts of their stories. And, you know, it's the, I mean, I want my kids to have more of my story where I love the Lord. I was a pretty good kid. I didn't do anything too crazy. You know, I wasn't super rebellious. I got saved when I was 8. I kind of had, you know, that rededicate my life. I came from a Southern Baptist church.
Yeah, me too. I did it every summer. There you go. Oh, whether yeah. I needed it or not.
Just in case.
Hurt.
But like a real rededication, I feel like when I was 17. And I think the Lord, that is a beautiful story, but there's also a beautiful story of the woman, you know, who loved much because she was forgiven much, who Jesus talks about, you know? And mm-hmm. so dedicating them to the Lord, like, Father, I give them to you. I trust you with them. Do not let me get in the way. Let me be prayerful and discerning in how I love them and encourage them. And then when they open the door, the older two in particular, giving them wisdom or, you know, what I see, but just really asking the Lord to just let me not get in the way.
Yeah. Yeah. What an incredibly difficult prayer for us as moms. Yeah. So I'm gonna flip to another topic. I'm taking a hard turn, and I had the benefit of seeing it probably on social media or on Matt's podcast. Do you do his podcast with him all the time?
Well,
I forget.
I think breaking the next news. Season I am going to. So I think they're releasing a few more of the episodes that he recorded this past summer and spring. But I think we're gonna start doing them together.
Oh my gosh, yay. I think that's brilliant. Oh, yay, I'm so glad. Mm-hmm. So glad. Well, I saw somewhere that you were going to talk on his podcast, and by the time this is out, it may already be out, about people pleasing and perfectionism. Yeah. And I was like, oh, isn't that the plight of most of us? And as I was thinking through this, I don't have perfectionistic tendencies, but I have people pleasing tendencies to a flaw. And I think all of us have little bits and pieces of that. And I love that you threw it out there that you were going to talk about that with him. And so just tell us a little bit about maybe what that's looked like, how it's impacted you. And maybe was there a point in time where you realized, like, this is not just who I am. This is becoming a little bit of a problem.
I mean, I was always the kid that, like, my parents did not have to bribe me for good grades. I wanted the good grade. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have the straight A's. I wanted to be the best. I wanted first chair in flute. You know, I wanted to be the best of everything. Like, I was very competitive. And it just, there was a good part of that where I wanted excellence and I wanted to, you know, use my gifts to their greatest ability, but also tied a lot of my worth into it. Mm-hmm. And so even in probably being a good girl, like, so I could be the poster child of the youth group. So, you know, I could live up to this expectation that I thought others had of me, or maybe they did have, but I for sure had it for myself. But then, you know, there's this disconnect because no one is perfect. I wasn't perfect. I wasn't the perfect good girl all the time. I didn't get all the good grades. I couldn't please everyone. And so, like, what do you do with that? And so I would say, and, you know, I got married pretty young. I was 19. And so then I was like, okay, now I want to be a good wife, a good mom. I want to be a good worship leader. I want to do this thing the right way and to please everyone in my life and to please myself in some ways, you know, to live up to the standard that I had in my own head that probably wasn't what God had in mind for me. And when I say that, like, not righteous living, I think he wants us to live, be holy as he is holy and be dedicated to him and be obedient. No one's going to get it right. And that was the biggest, you know, I grew up in church, became, like I said, became a Christian. I was 8, had a major breakthrough when I was 17. But then I think another breakthrough in my relationship with him was realizing Jesus didn't just die for our sins. He lived the life that we could never live. And so he is our perfection, because I could just sense that I wasn't measuring up and I couldn't do it. How does that even work? I can't, you know, I can't be perfect. This is impossible. And it was just this revelation, even though I'd been, you know, probably saturated in this truth, but it didn't really become reality to me. Until I was probably in my early to mid 20s. And I'll share a little bit more about that when I realized, oh, Jesus, you are my perfection. The weight is off my shoulders. I do not have to be perfect. I can be flawed. I can disappoint others. And I am okay as a person because I am a beloved child. I am adopted by a good and loving father. And I have my big brother, Jesus, who can vouch for me, who was perfect for me. And so that breaking point happened. I was the pastor's wife of a church that Matt had just become the pastor of probably 3 or 4 years before. So we're 3 or 4
was
years.
Was it the same church? Is it Village Church? Which church was it?
Uh-huh.
So same the whole one. Time y'all have been
Yeah, we've
church.
Been at the okay. Village for 22, almost 23 years. So our youngest was probably at the time. I was pregnant with our youngest oldest when we got to the Village. So we can tell how long we've been there by how old she is.
But yeah, yeah.
When she was probably like 3 or 4, and then our son was probably, so she was probably 3 or 2. He was a baby. I hit this wall where I was like, I can't do it. I can't be a good enough wife. I can't be a good enough mom. These musical pursuits, because I also lead worship, I had these, okay, I'll know I'm good enough when, you know, fill in the blank. And so I had this moment, this like measuring moment, where I was like, I will know I'm good enough if I get to do this. Well, I got to do that, and it still was not satisfying. I got up there and I was like, this is not all that it promised to be. And now I'm still questioning, am I good enough? Is this what the Lord has for me? And I was in like a sweet Bible study with some other young mamas, and this woman who's still a good friend of mine was leading it. And it was a Beth Moore Bible study, I think, Believing God. And it was just this invitation to basically just move on from the wilderness and what Egypt held for us, like that rebellion, and move into the promised land. Like making that move, like move on. And I just remember thinking, I don't know what that means right now, but I want to move on from this people-pleasing perfectionism. And later that week, I ended up going to our church's Celebrate Recovery meeting, and the Lord met me there in a huge way. Here I was, the pastor's wife, getting up to pick up this poker chip of surrender, where you kind of have to go in front of everyone and say, there's an area of my life that's become unmanageable. And for me, it wasn't alcohol, it wasn't drugs, it wasn't, you know, anything like that. It was trying to please people, trying to even just to please myself and try to be perfect. And I just was so tired. I couldn't do it anymore. And that was the beginning of just that relearning how to be, well, learning for the first time how to be a free child of God, to have my identity primarily that and not as a good girl or a pastor's wife or, you know, a worship leader, but to be okay with disappointing others and myself. And so that was huge.
And I don't know if you felt this, but I've felt before that the narrative in my head, I attribute to maybe that's God's narrative too. Not that I've heard it from him, but that, well, if I'm disappointed in myself, then I don't know how he's not disappointed in me and wouldn't have wanted me to do this or that or the other, or, and getting past that. And I kept going back to, especially now that we've adopted a little one. And I think I wrote about this in my new book that comes out next year, but I talked about how, you know, when we adopted JB, they gave us a new birth certificate, right? And so the old one was no longer valid, and how we are adopted into God's family, right? And he has chosen us, and even when I get it wrong, or I disappoint people or disappoint myself, or whatever the things are, perfectionism or people pleasing or whatever, like, we don't go back to the safe when JB messes up, our right. 9-year-old, like when he talks back or he isn't a good enough pitcher or whatever the things are we had hoped for him.
Yeah.
We don't go back to the safe and pull out the old birth certificate. We're like, sorry. I mean, you know, you didn't live up. Like, no, like he is Yanoff through and through. And I have to remember that with God, like in these moments that I can't attribute that to him. He's not going back and being like, well, the adoption's off because you didn't do X, Y, or Z. And for, like you said, for some reason that seems like it's not novel, but as a girl who grew up in church, for some reason that was a big yeah. hurdle for me too.
Yes.
And so, yeah, that's a good word you have for us. And I also appreciate that you went to Celebrate Recovery and you authentically said, like, this is not manageable
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah.
So just is the authenticity and living authentically like that when you're under a microscope from people like me who ask where sick from, but I didn't even ask, but people that are watching everything, has that been a process to learn to do that authentically? Even know you sometimes as a pastor's wife and a worship leader and people that are very well known, well outside of Dallas, has that been a process to walk through?
Yes, it has been. I think sometimes I'm like, did I share too much? I'm usually the overshare.
No, I usually do. So yeah.
But I'm like, you know, some of the things that I think I struggled with a lot before recovery and even in recovery was probably more before recovery where I was like, am I just the only one out here doing this? You know, is it just me? Yeah. Because it didn't feel like people that I looked up to were struggling the way I was. And so mm-hmm. part of how I operate is, man, I'm just going to be me because I guarantee you there are other people that are like where I was and thinking, I'm the only one out here, you know? And so, it does feel a little risky sometimes because people can use that against you, you know, but I feel very well known by the people around me.
Yeah.
And, they know me and I think I feel okay if other people misunderstand. I think mm-hmm. I do. I probably need God's help in that.
Just don't tell me if you misunderstand.
Exactly. No, just don't tell
yeah.
me. But so it can be a little precarious, but I think for the most part, Matt and I are both, authenticity is a very high value for us. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be as authentic as we can, as it relates to our stories. Now, if it relates to other people in our lives yeah. that we want to just protect because they're not ready, you know,
I get that. Yeah.
Then that's fine. But, I think we're just like, I'm so okay with the Lord and if he needs to rebuke me on something, he can. Mm-hmm. But the people that are in our lives that really know us, if there's something that they see that we need to, you know, kind of pull back on, then we will. But otherwise, just, yeah. I'm just going to be me.
Yeah. I love that. Tell us your bravest prayer that you pray over this, fighting the people pleasing and perfectionism.
Yeah. It would always be this: Father, may I fear you more than I fear what others think of me. And you know, when I talk about the fear of the Lord, it's not like, oh, I'm so scared of him, but I want to please and obey and trust you more than I please, trust, and obey others. Mm. And even in that, fearing the Lord, like even being open to correction when I mm-hmm. need it. And so then even if I do something or I overshare, or there's something that kind of hurt others unintentionally or was confusing, I want to be in a posture of, Lord, because I know you're not going to take my birth certificate away,
yeah.
I can receive from you what I need to learn from that.
That's a good word. Friends, I am so excited to introduce you to a company that you may not know about. And if you don't, it's time you do. Mr. Penn. All right, I'm talking specifically about Bible journaling supplies, and they have the best on the market. They have everything from journaling kits to journaling Bibles to no-bleed Bible pens and highlighters. And let me tell you something. That's critical, right? If you want to write in your Bible, that's what I love about it. If I want to write in my Bible, take notes, journal, like they have all the things you need in order to write on those thin pages and not have it bleed through. I think that's my favorite thing. But you know what else I love? I love that it was started by a Christian teacher in Louisiana, and they have 100,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Are you kidding me? 100,000. And so they offer custom products for churches, schools, conferences, and you get your money back if you don't like any of the products. And so you guys, seriously, shop the best Bible journaling supplies on the market. And remember, they're fantastic gifts for your friends, all the ladies in our lives at MrPen.com. That's where you shop at MrPen.com. That's MrPen.com. And guess what? Our audience gets a special discount. Yes, we do. Use the code MESMERIZE10. Again, MESMERIZE10, two S's in MESMERIZE, at checkout to get a 10% discount on your entire order. Okay, last topic I want to hit is navigating marriage. And you and Matt, what I love about your authenticity, and I think that's why everyone's like, we're all Team Chandler, because I think you guys are just so honest about the things that we've all walked, but we just want to hear someone else say it too. And so you talked about some brutal years in marriage, and not to mention, like you said earlier, that Matt had brain cancer. Yeah. Was it brain cancer or brain tumor? It was cancer.
It was cancer. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Okay. I mean, y'all have walked like in sickness and health, a lot of that. Just talk to us a little bit about those really hard years, whether it's in sickness and health or just those brutal years of marriage and walking that.
The first, I would say, 6 to 7 years of marriage was really tough. I think because we were just really immature, bound up kids. And I think we whitewashed our baggage. I think there's a real thing called spiritual bypass, where instead of actually dealing with some ways that you operate and ways that you learned probably in your family of origin, that they learned from their family of origin, that kind of just passed down these patterns that were not healthy. You can kind of just take a broad stroke. Just when I say whitewash, like, you know, you got this dirty, nasty wall. Well, instead of cleaning it first and then putting, you know, the paint up, you just paint right over it, and then it can start showing through. And I think ways that we can whitewash our baggage is just, and I have so much grace and compassion for people like this, because I was there, where you just think, if I could just pray enough, if I could just go to church enough, if we found the right home group, if we, you know, I take, you know, prayer seriously. I read my Bible from, you know, cover to cover. All those practices are so good, but like, just like that paint is so good to bring something refreshing. But if you don't deal with either habitual sin in your life or just things that marked you growing up, it's gonna start bleeding through. And so I think that's what happened with Matt and me. We joke that I had like a cute little carry-on of baggage and he had like a freight train of baggage behind him. But both needed to be addressed. And so for me, it was going to recovery. So that's, you know, that was probably six-ish years into marriage. And then, you know, had two kids. So we were well down the road. And I praise God that, you know, my parents, that was one of their things, are like, we don't, you know, my mom's parents had been divorced. My dad's parents stayed together, but like, it wasn't a happy marriage. Mm-hmm. And so my parents fought and passed down to us, like, whatever you can do to keep your marriage, you know? And I don't think it's like, I definitely don't want anyone who's had to go through a divorce to feel guilty about this or shamed for this, but just really put a high value on, it's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. Try your best to like make it work, like seek the Lord, make it work. And then Matt was in ministry, and so that kind of helped too. Like, okay, we're going to have to make this work. We want to make this work. So we started dealing with our baggage, and that was me going to recovery. Matt was seeing a therapist, and that's been a journey in and of itself, because you're not going to get through it all at once, you know? And so the first 7 years were hard that way because we just would get in this cycle of unhealth. And, you know, everything, it felt like, okay, in a good moment, just like no one move because we're doing fine. But then what, you know, life starts happening and I would unintentionally hurt Matt, you know, and then he would get cold and then I would wonder what's wrong and he'd be, I'm fine. And then all of a sudden something else would happen. He'd blow up and he shared this. So I don't feel bad sharing this right now. And then I would feel bad because I'd be like, gosh, if I could just get it together, we'd be okay. You know, not realizing we both had parts to play in it. And he would say he had a bigger part, but I don't know. I think we both had equal parts in that dynamic. And then, I praise God that we were in a healthier place when he had brain cancer. I mean, I'd gone to recovery. I was still serving in recovery, loved it. It's probably one of my favorite places to serve. Matt had done some therapy. I'd done some therapy. We had had our youngest child and then brain cancer hit. Mm-hmm. And that was tough. But I mean, I would say that the first 7 years of marriage was tougher than brain cancer. Wow. Because at least I knew Matt and I, we were together. Where before I felt like we were opposed to one another. Mm-hmm. We were just like, we weren't for each other. We were for our own selves and trying to make this work. And then working through our stuff, we started to be compassionate with one another. We started to be like one in all the ways. And then when brain cancer happened, it was super scary, but we were getting through it together. Yeah. And I think it was really good for me. It was a further, the Lord taking me further into no one and nothing can be your security outside of me. So, you know, it went from me being my own security to being perfect and controlling things that way, people pleasing, then Matt, you know, he was my rock. He was who I wanted to share everything with and who I looked to for wisdom, like, what do you think? And during that season, he just was incapacitated. And so I had to step out in some things. And the Lord had to be my foundation. There was a Isaiah 33:5-6. It says, like, and he will be, the Lord will be the stability of your times, a wealth of knowledge and salvation. I might have butchered that, but it's something
that's okay.
Like
that. We're all good, everybody. We're all good.
We're all good. Look it up. Isaiah 33:5-6. And so it was like taking that home. Like, okay, God, I don't know what's going to happen with Matt. I'm asking that you preserve his life. And by God's grace and by a miracle he has for almost 17 years. Mm-hmm. And so that's when the Lord was like, I've got to be it for you because Matt can't be. He's a man. He can't be it, but I can. So that those were some big takeaways in what was a really tumultuous time in our marriage in two very different ways. And like I said, I would take, this sounds crazy, and maybe because I know he's still healthy and fine, but it was easier to navigate cancer than it was to navigate early marriage conflict.
Yeah. And whether that's early marriage or anywhere in our marriage, when we're just, we're not on the same page and we're fighting against each other. And sometimes that fighting against each other isn't even fighting per se. Like, it's not words. It's just how we go about our lives. And that's a strong, strong word. What's your bravest prayer for your marriage?
That I ask the Lord to help me continue to pursue intimacy intentionally. I think as we get older and we've been married longer, we can just get used to each other and get in our rhythms. But I want to intentionally pursue intimacy with him because I know that that pleases the Lord. Mm. And so that's my prayer. Like, Lord, help me to remain vulnerable. I think that's what's really scary, especially in as there's just lots of transitions in our lives right now. And in my life as a woman, mm-hmm. so like with kids and then even just like biologically, you know, things just start changing and hormones are all yeah. over the place. And like being vulnerable with Matt in that and sharing it with them mm-hmm. in a place that's not, you know, give me a lot of grace. I'm going through stuff, but like really opening up to him and saying, this is hard, you know, mm. and I, please forgive me for the times I am really difficult to be around. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just to not close up. Cause I think what I can do is kind of go back in my shell and just protect myself. But I want to instead remain, intentionally, intimate with Matt in all the ways.
Wow. Yeah. What an incredible prayer. Well, Lauren Chandler, last time you were on, I'm going to wrap us with this. Yeah. You gave us your chicken enchilada recipe and it was really something. I mean, I have no idea why we were talking about chicken enchiladas, but I also don't know why we were talking about cattle and I couldn't say whatever word it was. I can't even remember anymore. So I didn't learn from it clearly. What's the current recipe of choice? You got any ones right now that are really like hitting you hard? Are you just going with the old faithfuls? Because over here, listen, I'm just going to be honest. I mean, we're still hitting the tacos and spaghetti. It's really sad. Maybe I throw in a shrimp something or other if I really feel fancy one night. But oh, yeah, I got nothing
so
good.
Fancy. What shrimp you got? Is so fancy. I don't have – I forgot to – I'm like, I know there's something I've been making lately that I've loved, but I can't think of it right now. That's but I went back to my mom's old school roast. Everybody loves it. And it's so easy. It's like – usually a rump roast, or if I can find a chuck roast that's big and not a lot of marbling, because it uh-huh. does, you put it in your crock pot. Well, actually, I put like some, I do like a big can of cream and mushroom soup and some water.
Gosh,
put the
I
roast in there. Uh-huh. Then I put Worcestershire or Dales. I don't uh-huh. know if you know Dales. Then some old school, the kitchen bouquet browning sauce. I don't know what's in it.
I don't know that one, but that's fabulous. Okay,
it's in like this like little weird kind of like it's got like a long spout and then a triangle bottom.
Okay,
and then like just some garlic, salt, pepper, and then beefy onion soup on top.
And you just throw that in for the day, and
for the day overnight for
smells good.
Yes, it smells. Sometimes overnight's tough because I'll wake up smelling it. Because it smells so good. But yeah, you could do it at the beginning, like in the morning, and it's ready by dinner time. And that's like everybody, if I say, hey, I'm making roast for dinner, everybody comes over.
They all come home for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there you go. I don't ask any other guest that's on the show ever about recipes. I don't know. That's just a Lauren Chandler, Cynthia Ganoff thing where I'm like, what you got? What you got? What you cooking over there? So thanks for being here. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Cynthia.
Always
anytime.
So fun. Okay, listen, everyone, before we go, The Overcomers is the podcast name.
Yes.
Matt's podcast that now is Matt's podcast. It's Lauren's podcast now, everybody.
Yeah,
it's a Chandler podcast. Anything else you want to point us to that is going on over there that we need to be paying attention to?
I mean, he's got this devotional coming out, Awake and Alive, I believe. I have it sitting over here behind me. I'm working on something right now. Mm-hmm. So it's not a book. It's not anything that I would write. It's more like physical than that. And I'm super excited about it. It will be something experiential.
Oh,
and
so excited.
Hopefully coming early next year.
Okay.
And I just watch my socials for it. I'll probably start posting about it, little teasers and stuff in the next month.
Okay. Well then I'm gonna be rapping at the door saying let's talk about it. So well
let's
whenever
do it.
You're ready, let's do it again. Thanks, friend.
Thanks, Cynthia.
All right, you guys, I hope you enjoyed Lauren. She's amazing. If you live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and you don't have a church, the Village Church is amazing. And don't miss the Overcomers podcast that now we know Lauren is going to be a part of. So, yeah, I'll be sure and link that in podcast notes. And it would mean so much to me if you'd take a second and leave a review for the podcast. Help other people find us. All right, you guys, you're the very best. Thanks for being part of the Mesmerize family.
Thank you. Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. You're number two, burns the hair in my nose. But we fought hand in paw, now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.